Barry Zito yesterday had his first outing of the spring. He was facing, he and his San Francisco Giants were facing the Milwaukee Brewers. And the very beginning of the game, in his first at-bat of this year's preseason, of this year's exhibition season, Prince Fielder came to the plate, and Zito went right in his back.
Hit him.
Zito plunked Prince Fielder as retribution for last year's home run celebration that Prince Fielder had when he won a late season game that was extremely important to the Brewers in their ultimately fruitless chase of a wild card spot. When he celebrated, when he came into home plate, untucked his shirt, and his teammates met him at home plate and all fell down like they were bowling pins.
Yeah.
The Giants stewed over that all winter long.
All winter long.
And in Scottsdale, Arizona, Barry Zito put a fastball right in Prince Fielder's back in a first at-bat of spring training. Go lick the floor as yours.
I hope everything's settled now. I hope Barry Zito's feeling good about, I got you back. I hope we're square. I hope you know what I mean now. You don't do that, or I'll hit you again. All it was missing was, Seriously. Seriously, you baseball players, stop it. This is a walk-off home run in a huge game. You know, Barry, if you want to go after somebody, last I checked, when he jumped and hit the base, everybody fell down. Guess what? Everybody was in on it. Go hit every player if you got some guts, buddy. How about that? Oh, no, don't celebrate. Don't celebrate. He just went yard on you, okay? Deal with that. Instead of what he did at the end of the game, okay? Worry about the stinking pitch you threw that they're still looking for that he knocked over the wall. Instead of, I don't like the way you rounded the bases. I'm going to get you in the spring. You wonder why baseball players get ripped at times? It's for garbage like this.
Okay, couple of things.
Go ahead.
First off, everyone in the sport disagrees with you.
Fine. Boy, that really chaps me.
Our staff loves it.
Yeah.
Stats is went off on this. And I'm sure you can read Stats Don't Lie, which is his blog on the Mike and Mike page at ESPNRadio.com. I'm sure he'll go off on this. Now, a couple of people disagree with you. One of them is Torrey Hunter.
Okay.
Last year, shortly after Fielder's celebration was replayed on the cable TV highlight shows, I'm reading this from ESPN.com, Torrey Hunter said, quote, "If I was a pitcher, I'd be ticked off. My mouth would be wide open. Baseball is not like the NFL where you can celebrate in the end zone. You've got to keep your cool, play the game. You can't do that."
You know what? You know what, Torrey? Maybe baseball should get a little more like football. What's the most popular sport in the land right now? By far, the NFL, my friend. Maybe if you had a little bit more fun, instead of having a big hit and running around the bases with your head down like you're supposed to. And you know what? It's not like he pointed at Zito and anybody on the field. He celebrated with his teammates.
Right.
They had a little goofy thing at home plate. Nobody turned at Zito and all pointed at Zito and said, aha, and mocked you. You know what? I'm so tired of the fact that baseball players can't deal with the fact that you got a home run hit off you. You don't let, and if somebody celebrates, and I don't mean at the other team. You know, if he pointed at Barry Zito the whole time, I would understand a little more. But he didn't. It was a celebration amongst his teammates. Torrey Hunter, maybe if you got a little more like the NFL in that case, maybe you'd be a little more popular than you are right now.
All right, let me go to the next.
Go ahead.
You know who else disagrees with
who?
You? Prince Fielder's manager, Ken Maka, reportedly apologized to the Giants manager, Bruce Bochy, at the winter meetings for the celebration.
Yeah, and you know what? That was the politically correct thing to do, and I bet you he told Fielder and everybody else after the game, you know what? I loved it. At least I hope he did. That's what he should have done.
Okay.
Because it did nothing. It did nothing against, you know, the Giants. It was a celebration. There's nothing wrong with, especially, this wasn't in the first inning of the game. This was a walk-off, home run, big game coming to the end of the season.
12th inning.
Get over it, baseball.
September 6th, 12th inning walk-off home run, 2-1 win. One more, Rob Nyer, ESPN.com. He writes, look, I'm not against players having fun on the field. It's a game and fans buy tickets to be entertained. Every time a college football player gets flagged for the tiniest bit of exuberance, I shake my head. Let the kid enjoy the moment a little bit. But if you have any knowledge or appreciation for the culture of baseball, you know Fielder's stunt was over the top. It was disrespectful. And if he's going to pull stuff like that, he's got absolutely no right to take umbrage the next time a pitcher gets revenge with a fastball to the ribs. And then Nyer takes the gratuitous shot. He writes, hey, he's got plenty of built-in padding anyway. Not only is he attacking your argument,
yeah,
but he is attacking fat people. So he is indirectly attacking you as well.
I'm going to leave that out of it. What was disrespectful? In all seriousness, somebody tell me.
In the culture of baseball, that's considered disrespectful.
Okay, well,
standing at home plate and admiring your home run is disrespectful.
I guess that's my issue. I know this has been all the emails. I know this has been going on in baseball forever, but it doesn't mean I have to agree with it. I disagree with it. To me, there was nothing disrespectful to the other team. That's what I look for. And we do see some wacky celebrations in the NFL. And you know what? If you turn around and taunt the opposing team, then next time you run across the middle, you're probably going to get smoked. But you know what? As far as celebrating, go celebrate. Go celebrate a big play. I guess that this just gives me another time to say how much I disagree with this part of baseball that says no matter how big the play, God forbid you celebrate. God forbid you celebrate because, oh, there'll be retribution. I just don't like that.
People are asking, is Golic breaking his Lenten vow by yelling? No. He's not yelling at me. So I think that's okay. I both agree and disagree with you. I think generally speaking, you're right. But I also think you take it a little far.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Golic went off this morning. Let me set the scene again for those who might just be joining us. Prince Fielder last year had a walk-off home run in the 12th inning of a September game when they were in a pennant race, or at least a wild card race, against the San Francisco Giants. And as he came into home plate, he crossed the plate and all of his teammates met him there and they all fell down like they were bowling pins.
Right.
The San Francisco Giants were dismayed by that action. And yesterday, in the first at-bat of a spring training, Barry Zito drilled Prince Fielder.
Yeah,
Cecil. Yeah. With a very, very soft fastball in the middle of his back.
He showed him.
Fielder's quote, Golic went off, just went off this morning. Fielder's quote, if that's what they've got to do, that's what they've got to do. Let them hit me once. If that makes them feel better, that's awesome. Now we can just play baseball. So he didn't seem to have a big problem with it. Golic went completely crazy. Let's bring in Buster Olney on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline and get his perspective. What is your feeling on all this, Buster, and what would you suspect the feeling is for those around the sport?
Hey, Golic,
yeah.
In this case,
yeah.
I got your back.
All right.
At least part of it. At least part of it. I think we've now established that baseball's unwritten rules probably are comprised of about 27 volumes. Golic's unwritten rules are comprised of two words: play better. And in this case, I was when it happened, I just thought it was stupid. I thought the reaction of the Giants was stupid because it wasn't like Prince Fielder was pointing at Bobby Howard as he went around the bases. He didn't look at him even. They just had their little celebration to home plate. I talked to one player when that happened. He said, hey, if you're on a pitcher on the Giants, get off the field. Don't worry about what they're doing. You just got beat. Next time, make a better pitch. And to take it one step further, if the Giants are offended by his actions, one of their great young players that they have is this kid named Pablo Sandoval. His nickname's Kung Fu Panda. Before every at-bat, he does this thing where he stands out in front of home plate. He steps out. He touches the dirt. He moves around. He's just having fun. That's just kind of what he does. If you wanted to find a reason to be offended by that, you probably could be. But he's just being himself. It's not that big of a deal. And yet the Giants wind up being offended by what Prince Fielder did. Now, I do think there are instances where it's right for guys to get drilled. And it's right for teams to retaliate. This was definitely not one.
I will agree with you. And I went off just because I'm just tired of it being so one-sided. But in a calmer, more serious tone, I guess I will ask the question. And people emailing in of people saying I played baseball and you don't disrespect the other team and this. And my question back to them is, because I agree with you, there is a line. In baseball, unfortunately, we don't know where that line is, or it's so far off to one side that it's ridiculous. I want to know in this instance, what was disrespectful to the Giants? What did he do that was disrespectful to the Giants? And the answer, in my opinion, is nothing.
Well, what they were offended by was the fact that this is choreographed.
Oh, geez.
That the fact that the Brewers, who have done this type of thing in the past, when they went for that playoff run, when CeCe Sabathia was on the team. You know, they started thing with pulling out their shirts, and that rankled some of the opposing players. And when they did this, this is something that they had talked about. Look, if we get into a situation where there's a walk-off home run, let's all meet at home plate and pretend you guys are bowling pins and the guy who hits the home run is the bowling ball. But it wasn't aimed at the other team. It was just something that they were having fun with. And I will say this in defense of Barry Zito, and I think Golic, you'll appreciate this. You know, privately, I don't know what Barry Zito thinks about all this, but on a team, if you have players on your team who are offended by this, and you're the guy on the mound, it's kind of your responsibility to take up for your team. It might be that Barry Zito thinks this whole thing was stupid, but he was the guy on the mound with the ball, and Prince Fielder was up, and so he was the one that had to do the dirty work.
You're right. You know what? You're 100% right about that. That you feel as a teammate, you owe it to the rest of your team to do it, even though it's a dumb thing to do. I understand completely what you're saying.
And I mean, I've only got the video of it that we've been seeing here, but it looks like he threw the ball about 70 miles an hour. I mean, it's not, you know, Prince Fielder actually picked the ball up and threw it back. So it's not as though he threw that hard at it. One way or another, it was what it was. On we go. I want to pick up with something we had earlier this week, Buster. We had the commissioner of Major League Baseball on, Bud Selig, and what I thought was a pretty good conversation. And while on the subject of the Padres having to trade away at some point this year Adrian Gonzalez, because they can't afford to build around him long term, even though he's a young, great player, Bud Selig used the terms hope and faith. He said, you know, we believe that on April 1st, all of our teams, or at least a huge number of them, have to have hope and faith. So as we get set to start this year's baseball season, looking around, what percentage of the teams in baseball have hope and faith right now?
Well, it depends on how you define that. I mean, let's face it. If you're the Cleveland Indians, you don't have a lot of hope. You know, they traded away CeCe Sabathia. They traded away Coach Lee. Their payroll's way down. If you're the Minnesota Twins, you've increased your payroll. You're opening a new field. You might not have the same level of expectation that the Yankees do, but you certainly have hope and faith. I think it's better than what it was in 2000. I think in the last couple of years, though, it started to erode a little bit. And I do think in the next labor agreement, you're going to start to see more of a push to try to get, you know, the playing field better in terms of the disparity between the big market teams and small market teams. There's no doubt that it's taken a couple of notches backwards the last couple of years.
Yeah, thanks for singling out my tribe. I appreciate it.
There is one Robert Stanberry only who will join us in this prestigious spot every Friday through the baseball season. Thank you, Buster.
Thanks, Buster.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Our buddy Tim Kirchin, our baseball insider extraordinaire. Timmy, Golic is just going a little bit nuts today, though he has certainly calmed down on the idea, this whole retribution thing in baseball. He's just never been able to quite get his mind around it.
Right. Well, let me tell you one thing, Greeny, seriously. People who think that, you know, we write poetically about baseball and it's this beautiful game, and it is, but ultimately, it's a hard game played by hard men, and baseball players are the most vengeful people I have ever met in my life. Keep in mind that many, many years ago, Al Bumbry crossed home plate and absolutely barreled over, put his shoulder down, and knocked Dennis Eckersley, who was backing up home plate, knocked him to the ground. And Mike Flanagan asked Al Bumbry, what was that all about? And Bumbry said, he hit me with a pitch 8 years ago. And he still had to get him back. And Mike Flanagan said it was 8 years ago. And he said, I don't care, it hurt. And he went and got him. And an even better story is when Ed Farmer, former major league pitcher.
This is the story, just so you know, this is the story I was teasing. My favorite plunking story of all time. I read it in Timmy's book. Is this a great game or what? Go ahead, Timmy.
So Ed Farmer gives up a home run to Wayne Gross, who takes his sweet time running around the bases. And since, and Ed Farmer is absolutely infuriated by this, but since he's a reliever and they don't see the Orioles again for a while, it takes him 3 years until he gets to face Wayne Gross again. And the next time he faces him, he's his teammate. And they're in spring training. And he's throwing BP during spring training. And he hits Wayne Gross right in the middle of the bat, in the back, a teammate. And Wayne Gross looks at him and goes, what was that all about? And he said, that was for 3 years ago. And Wayne Gross kind of like shook his head and said, okay, all right, we're done now. He hit a teammate in the middle of the back because he rounded the bases on a home run too slowly 3 years earlier.
I love that story.
That's who baseball players are, and they'll never change. If you disrespect them or the game or their teammates, you are going to pay for it. I promise.
How did Cecil Fielder...
Prince.
Geez,
we both keep doing that all day.
How did Prince Fielder disrespect the Giants with that? It didn't disrespect the Giants at all.
All right. I don't think he did. Now, I would understand how a pitcher would be upset. I really would. But at the same time, it was a walk-off home run, okay? This didn't happen in the fourth inning of a game. Listen, you cattle addict, when you're, you know, six runs ahead or six runs down in
right.
the fourth inning of a game, you are going to pay for that,
right.
I promise. But I think all rules are off when you hit a walk-off home run like that. Did it show up some of the other players? I understand, but I didn't have a problem with it, and I think it's acceptable when it's a walk-off situation like that. But was I surprised that they hit Prince Fielder? Absolutely not. I repeat, a hard game played by hard men, and they will not put up with anything, and they will make you pay for it.
I love that story. I read that in Timmy. Timmy's book is filled with a million stories.
It is a funny story, and you chuckle, but then you step back and realize how ridiculous it sounds.
Wow.
Did Ed Farmer ever worry about the pitch that he threw? It's amazing how these pitchers are mad at these hitters, yet do they ever say, boy, I threw a bad pitch? That doesn't seem to compute to them.
All right, now, Golic, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Some offensive lineman knocks you right on your butt and stands over top of you and starts screaming at you.
That's different.
You'll never get around me.
Timmy.
Maybe that happened every
Timmy.
Day in football. I don't even understand.
Tim.
I'm just saying that Ed Farmer felt like he got shown up by the run around the bases. He wasn't saying he didn't deserve to hit a home run off me. He was upset that a guy took his time going around the bases.
All
That's
right.
what upset
him. So, I guess my point is, where's the line? You have to run X amount of miles an hour around the base, and there's taunting, and then there's, you know, kind of on the line, but there's no kind of on the line.
Timmy's on your side on this one. Stay with him. He's agreeing with you.
No, we're kind of disagreeing,
Mike,
because
I'm agreeing with you.
Right.
I say the retaliation is needed, and it's going to happen. I'm saying, though, the rules are off. When Prince Fielder hits a walk-off home run, what he did there was not a problem because he ran around the bases. The celebration with his teammates took place at home plate. And just because it was very creative doesn't mean you should be throwing at the guy's head. I agree with that.
Golic, you're so emotional, you can't tell when someone is on your side. Timmy, he spent this entire conversation agreeing with you.
We disagreed on one other
thing. And yet you're yelling at him.
That.
All right, Tim, enjoy it again.
Thanks,
this is the last day of the Grapefruit Express. Those guys have been all over the state of Florida on the bus. It's been a lot of fun. We've had someone on pretty much every day since it began. Thank you, Timmy. Enjoy. We'll see you when you get back up here. And there he goes. Tim Kirchner on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. There we have it. Okay, Mike and Mike in the Morning. You feel better now? He agrees with you. He's on your side.
Okay,
relax.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Adam Schefter is here, our NFL insider on this, the first day of pro football free agency, the first day of the 2010 football year. We run into Schefter in the hallway. The phone is surgically attached to his head. He's got like 9 calls pending between now and the next 7 minutes that he'll be with us. So let's just get right to it. Let's start in Chicago. At this moment, that seems to be the epicenter of everything. What's the latest?
Well, I expect that before the day is through, Julius Peppers, excuse me, before the day is through, Julius Peppers.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Mike. Julius Peppers will be a Chicago Bear. Chester Taylor, I think, will be a Chicago Bear. Brandon Manu Maliuma will be a Bear. And there'll be some big numbers that the Bears are throwing around. This was a desperate team. We talked about this yesterday.
Yes.
Said they were the most desperate team in free agency. It's exactly what you're seeing. You're seeing a desperate team without picks pay premium prices for these players.
So the tight end that you talked about there that's going to sign with the Bears, it makes it interesting because they have a tight end in Greg Olsen who has gotten better each of his 3 years and I think is on the verge of breaking out as one of the better tight ends. What's his future?
Well, that's exactly it. When we talk about them going out and signing these players and bringing them in and not having draft picks, now they can go trade Greg Olsen and get back a draft pick in return for him. And so when Mana Maluyona's contract is done, I believe the numbers will be big enough that you'll say, they're not paying him that money not to play, not to be used, and they will look at dealing Greg Olsen. And if they can get the right price, then Greg Olsen will be dealt.
Wow.
Mike, the other big move that was made yesterday that caught some people by surprise was the release of Jake Delhomme. Now, I guess once they put the first and the third on Moore, they made it clear he was going to be their quarterback. What will the market be like for Jake Delhomme?
I think there'll be some market because there were not a lot of top-shelf quarterbacks in free agency. Chad Pennington was about to get a deal done with Miami. There was a breakdown in the talks. It still may get done. It may not. But you're looking at a situation where Jake Delhomme could be the bridge between Sam Bradford or Jimmy Clausen or whatever young quarterback some team has in the future. And Jake Delhomme is a great person. You guys have met him before,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
As classy as they get. So there are enough people that need a quarterback like that. If you're St. Louis, wouldn't you love to bring in a Jake Delhomme until the next guy is ready? There are opportunities. Where he winds up, we'll see. Now, the Carolina Panthers still are obligated to pay him $12.7 million. So Jake Delhomme can go where he wants to go. He's going to be paid this year one way or another.
He can get paid the minimum, and he's still making a ton of money, that's for sure. How about along with the unrestricted free agents we're talking about, and again, Nate Burleson was the first one to sign. He signed with the Detroit Lions. How about these guys that are tendered? Really, the guys tendered with only a first. The first and a third, I don't think anybody's going to go for. But that first means that team's dangling them. So which player with a first-round tender do you think is most likely to move?
Well, I know you're probably steering me towards Brandon Marshall.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a team out there that's going to give them a first-round draft choice for him. And I know it's hard to imagine because when you say would you rather have Dez Bryant or Brandon Marshall and whatever baggage he brings, you would think Brandon Marshall. But the point of it is that I think the teams are going to be leery about doing that, and I think that Denver's going to have a hard time getting back a first-round pick for Brandon Marshall, which creates the possibility and the potential for more drama there in Denver regarding Brandon Marshall because he was tendered at the $2.5 million number. You think Brandon Marshall is going to be happy about coming in to play for $2.5 million?
I could see him punting the ball away ball boy at training camp. Mike and Shefty is in studio with us. I brought this up with Golic yesterday. He's a guy who's not a restricted free agent, but probably could be traded. What would it take to get Anquan Boldin from Arizona?
I think he's going to be traded, and I think it's going to take a second or third round pick. Now, the problem is not compensating the Cardinals. It's compensating Anquan Boldin because he's over 30. He's got a year left in his contract. He wants a new deal. That's the issue there. So any team that trades for him knows that they're going to have to pay Anquan Boldin, and that's the hang-up in that particular situation of what's going on. Now, Anquan Boldin, to me, is as tough as any player in football, and I would want him on my football team any day of the week. But some team is going to have to step forward. We've heard perhaps Baltimore to see if they are willing to give up the pick that it takes to go get Anquan Boldin, and I would say, why not?
You know, one of the teams we've seen very active and hasn't worked out very well has been the Washington Redskins. Now, they cut a bunch of players. Are they going to be big-time players in this market?
You know, this is very interesting because I had a team call me yesterday. They said, telling you, Julius Peppers is going to Washington. I said, I'm telling you he's not. And we went back and forth. He was adamant, and I was just as adamant with this NFL executive that he was not going to Washington, and he's not going to Washington. He's in Chicago. Now, the Redskins are taking a bit of a different approach. They're being a little bit patient. Now, they do have Chad Clifton, the Green Bay offensive tackle, in there today. And this is interesting on a number of levels. Number one, if the Redskins can sign Chad Clifton, they no longer need to draft a left tackle in the opening round and can focus all their energies on going after one of the quarterbacks, be it Sam Bradford or Jimmy Clausen. Number two, you take away Aaron Rodgers' blindside protector, and you now entrust his security and safety to T.J. Lang, who was a rookie last year, who they like, but is still a bit unproven. And so there are some issues here that one free agent move will obviously have ramifications on a lot of stuff going on. We brought up Julius Peppers in Chicago. Kyle Vandenbosch, Jim Schwartz is in Kyle Vandenbosch's house at 12:01, taking a page out of Rex Ryan's playbook last year. At 2:30 in the morning, they're drinking red wine. If Jim Schwartz, the Lions head coach, doesn't land Kyle Vandenbosch, I would be stunned. And with Vandenbosch, I think, headed to Detroit, and with Peppers headed to Chicago, I think that leaves Aaron Kampman headed to Seattle. Their new GM, John Schneider, came from Green Bay, knows the type of player and person that Aaron Kampman is. I think they're the favorites to land Aaron Kampman.
Mike and Shefty, whose phone has rung 9 times while he's been sitting here. One last one quickly. You know my interest. I think the Jets trade to San Diego for Cromartie is a terrific deal. You put him on the other side. You know I wanted Nnamdi Asamoah. You told me that wasn't a possibility. I think this was the next best thing.
But I tell you, it wouldn't happen that way. And here's the thing, a couple of thoughts. Number one, Antonio Cromartie's play against the Jets made this deal possible. Yeah. He gave a very half-hearted attempt to tackle Sean Green that angered some of his teammates, and that was the first step to him being dealt out of San Diego. And once that play happened, the Sean Green touchdown run, then it paved the way for Antonio Cromartie to be dealt. The Jets believe that in their system, playing man-to-man defense, Cromartie will go back to being one of the best cornerbacks in the league that he was. Now, if you're Tom Brady or you're Chad Henne or you're whatever quarterback it is going up against the Jets and you don't want to throw it to Darrelle Revis anymore, good luck throwing it at Antonio Cromartie. The danger in this, Greeny, is that Cromartie's got 1 year left in his contract. Darrelle Revis wants a new contract. Who doesn't want a new contract?
Yeah, how about it?
Right? So at some point, the Jets are going to have a financial issue with the two cornerbacks, but that's a down-the-line issue. They could head into this season knowing that they have Antonio Cromartie.
Schefty, terrific job. Answer your phone. It's been ringing like crazy. You will see and hear Adam Schefter probably about the next 22 hours here on All the Family of Networks, and if anything breaks in the next hour or so, he will be back in here.